braced against a gnarled, knotted tree trunk, shallowly breathing the stale mustiness of the forest, remembering the sweetness of Alderaan's flowing Tarla woods, the soft grass beneath the magnificent towering trees, the drifting birdsong, the deep blue sky, the warm shafting sunlight, Briha's hand in his. He closed his eyes and dreamed himself back there, dreamed his own memories so he wouldn't have to listen to Obi-Wan's anymore. It felt like a betrayal, but he couldn't help it. He had limits too, and his had been reached. At length, Obi-Wan came to, and they continued, following the yellow sap scars he'd made at dawn. Bail found himself constantly tensing, waiting for the next round of visions to strike his companion, worrying that Obi-Wan's worst fears would come to pass, and the Sith would break him, shatter him with more hallucinations, and turn him into a monster. Before they left the clearing, while Obi-Wan was buckling on his belt, Bail had pulled the lightsaber close to the top of the backpack. The thought of using the weapon made him feel sick. It won't come to that. It won't. It won't. But was that wishful thinking? I don't care if it is. It won't. They made it out of the woodland to the ravine gashed so deep in the landscape. When Obi-Wan saw the Sith temple, he staggered and nearly fell, his face draining to gray. "Breathe," said Bail, lowering him to the stony soil, a safe distance from the ravine's edge. "Don't look at it, just breathe."
"I don't need to look at it," said Obi-Wan, one clenched fist pressed against his heart. "I can feel it. I can hear it. Shouting."
Every muscle aching, Bail stared at the temple. Then he looked down at Obi-Wan. "Okay, I was wrong. You were right. You can't do this. Go back in the woods. I'll investigate the temple, destroy whatever I find. Then I'll..."
"What? No," said Obi-Wan. "You can't. You might destroy a way for us to call for help. You wouldn't recognize a Sith communications device if it bit you."
Grimacing, he dropped to one knee. "I should have thought of that," he thought, then said, "Good point. Okay, then I'll bring whatever I find back here."
"No."
Obi-Wan grabbed his wrist, his face sheened with sweat.
"There's no way of knowing if the artifacts are dangerous for you to touch. Besides, look at that ravine, Bail. You might make it down safely. You might make it up the other side safely. Once. You don't dare risk it twice. Not if you don't have to."
"Yeah, it's treacherous," he agreed and eased his wrist free. "But you can't climb it. Look at you."
"I'm fine."
Bail almost laughed. "If fine was another word for on the brink of collapse, I'd agree with you. But it isn't. You're not fine. You're losing."
"From a certain point of view, possibly," said Obi-Wan.
Then he smiled, a feral baring of teeth.
"But I prefer to think of it as not winning at the moment. So we go."
He was crazy. They were crazy, both of them. Starving, exhausted, pushed to the ends of their physical and mental limits. And now, they were going rock climbing? And yet, what was the alternative? Curl up and wait for death? Bare their throats to the Sith and say, "All right, you win"? He looked again at the temple. So close, so far away. Then he looked back at Obi-Wan. "You're sure?"
"Quite sure."
"Yeah, well, that's what you said when we were on approach to Zagula," he muttered. Then he sighed, stood, and bent to help Obi-Wan to his feet. "All right, we'll risk it."
"Wait," said Obi-Wan, and unbuckled his belt.
He fumbled the straps, his fingers clumsy.
"Put this on. Clip my lightsaber to it."
Bail stepped back.
"Why?"
This time, Obi-Wan's smile was gentle.
"It's called being on the safe side."
He shook his head.
"I don't need it."
"You might."
"I won't." "You don't know that," said Obi-Wan, not smiling at all now. "You don't know what will happen when I'm in spitting distance of that Sith temple, and neither do I."
"I know you're not going to kill me."
"Bail," said Obi-Wan,
breathing was ragged.
Don't be a fool. You know nothing of the kind, and without that lightsaber, you will never stop me. Take the belt, wear my weapon. Please.
Ignoring Obi-Wan's desperation would be tantamount to cruelty, so he took the belt and buckled it around his waist, pulled the lightsaber from his backpack, and clicked it to the belt. It felt odd, heavy. He couldn't bring himself to look at it. Glanced at Obi-Wan instead.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that I got you into this, Bail thought.
They walked to the edge of the ravine and looked over the side.
Zigzag down there, Bail suggested, pointing to a hint, a suggestion of a trail running between the tumbled rocks and weathered gullies and twisted half-grown saplings. Go left, then track right? That seems reasonable,
said Obi-Wan, and he coughed. He sounded like a Linta, a ghastly dryland bubbling.
I'll go first, Bail said. You stick close behind me. That way if something happens... If you have more visions, if you fall, Bail thought.
Obi-Wan slid a look sideways.
I don't think so. I'll go first. That way, if something happens, I won't take you with me.
Bail chewed his lip, but there was no time for more arguments.
All right, he said grudgingly.
They started down the ravine. Sliding rock, slipping dirt, scrapes, cuts, and bruises. Step by uncertain, dangerous step, they navigated their way down the steep, jagged slope. More than once, they overbalanced or skidded down a rock gully, lost their footing as the dry, yellow-brown dirt shifted beneath them. More than once, they sat down hard, clutching at sapling or rock to prevent disaster, their jarred spines screaming, their hearts hammering out of control. Sweat streaked their faces, stung their eyes, slicked their palms, soaked their stinking, filthy clothes. And brooding above them, a silent menace, a vulture of stone, the Black Sith Temple, the source of every ill. With each jarring footfall, Bail felt the lightsaber gently slap him. He resented its presence, dreaded what it meant, dreaded that Obi-Wan would finally succumb to this place. He couldn't begin to understand the kind of technology that could do this, that could reach into a Jedi's mind, a mind as strong and disciplined and formidable as Obi-Wan's, and tear it apart piecemeal, memory by memory. He couldn't understand a sentient being who'd want to. The brutal descent continued, agonizingly slow. They reached the quarter mark, the one-third mark. They reached the halfway point, where a kink in the landscape led to one short, sharp drop, then unrolled more kindly to the ravine's uneven floor. Bail started to feel sick. His muscles shrieked, his tendons burned, his bones were throbbing. He wanted this to be over. He wanted to lay down and weep, sleep, wake up from this nightmare. He looked at Obi-Wan, one tight pace ahead of him.
If I feel sick, if I feel like dying...
Hey, you okay?
Yes,
grunted Obi-Wan. He was breathing too hard, too fast. His feet were faltering, his hands bloody, his balance uncertain. Surely any moment now the Jedi was going to fall.
I need to stop, Bail said, and caught hold of a jutting tree root as a brake.
Obi-Wan! Obi-Wan turned sideways, his boots skidding as he slid to a halt.
I said I do. I need to stop. He insisted as Obi-Wan glared,
tried not to betray shock or dismay or anything that would tell Obi-Wan just how bad he looked.
I'm not a Jedi. I don't have unlimited resources. Bail.
Obi-Wan blotted his ashen face on his sleeve.
Don't treat me like a fool. Don't.
His eyes rolled back. His rasping breath caught. He was going under. The visions had returned.
Obi-Wan!
Bail shouted and threw himself forward, his right hand still anchored to the sapling's jutting root. Rag limp, Obi-Wan toppled. Bail flung out his left hand, caught hold of the Jedi's sleeve, his wrist, and was jerked groundward hard. His face hit rough rock. Pain exploded through his nose and his partially healed split lip. He felt blood, tasted blood. Bright lights burst behind his eyelids. The air left his lungs in an explosive rush, and his wrenched shoulder, bearing Obi-Wan's full dead weight, lit up like fireworks on House Organa's founding day. He let out the pain in one long, anguished cry, heard its shivering echoes bounce through the ravine, and kept the next one trapped in his throat. Lifting his head, he looked at Obi-Wan, but the Jedi was lost again in hellish memories. He could scream until his skull cracked. Obi-Wan wouldn't hear him. He put his head down, locked the fingers of his right hand around that tree root, and his left around Obi-Wan's narrow wrist, and then, on a deep breath, he closed his eyes to all sensation.
Don't let go! Don't let go! Don't let go! Don't let go!
But of course, he did. Chapter 21. Qui-Gon was dying in his arms yet again when pain ripped him out of memory. New pain, physical pain, sharp, urgent. His forehead, his left knee, his left elbow, his right thigh. The Sith voice silenced at last, incredibly, his mind startlingly clear. He opened his eyes and stared at the sky. Someone was shouting,
"Obi-Wan! Obi-Wan!"
A shower of dirt and small stones rained down on him. He spat gravel, tried to push to his elbows, and that hurt even more.
"No! No! Don't move!" the boy shouted. "I'll be right there! Don't move! Don't even breathe!"
Well, that was silly. He had to breathe. He spat more gravel, trying to identify the voice. There'd been so many voices. Qui-Gon and Anakin and Dooku and Tavor Mandirli and Xanatos. Even the fire beetles had voices, shrill, ravenous squeakings as they chewed through his flesh.
Bail. Bail Organa. That's who had shouted. This was Zagula. The absent Sith were trying to kill him, and... Oh dear, I seem to have fallen down a ravine.
Breathing out hard, he sat up, head swimming, pounding, and found himself on the ravine's rocky floor. That wasn't good. He looked down at his left knee. His ripped leggings were soaked bright red. So was his left sleeve. And yes, that was more blood down his right thigh. Lifting his hand, he touched his fingertips to his forehead above his right eye. The skin was split. He could feel it. His fingers came away wet and crimson, and the pain was like a vibrosaw. Bad. Very bad. And yet, there was relief. And something like laughter. Because his body's pain had stopped the endless recycling of memories, and silenced, however briefly, the Sith's relentless voice.
"Well, that's wonderful. Let's hear it for pain."
A colder, saner part of himself knew only too well that this nonsensical giddiness was a reaction to the long days of unbearable strain and sorrow he'd endured since the crash. He knew that. He knew it. And yet, he couldn't resist. Bail skidded down beside him in a fresh shower of rocks and dirt. His lip was split open again, his nose scraped raw and his hands, and his ruined shirt was shredded across the left shoulder. His left arm hung awkwardly, and his bloodied face was tight. But he still had the belt with the lightsaber clipped to it.
"You fool! I said don't move! Are you all right? I can't believe you're not dead!"
How much longer would this respite from the Sith's assault last? Not long. Not long, surely.
"We are running out of time," Obi-Wan thought. "No, I'm not dead. Help me to stand."
"Stand?
Obi-Wan, Bail," he said sharply. "While I'm hurting, I can think. Right now I'm hurting rather a lot, so let's not waste it, shall we?"
Bail's bloodied lips thinned, which made him wince.
"All right, I'll help you stand."
Which was an interesting exercise. It certainly got him thinking, as his left knee and right thigh shrieked a scarlet protest, and the vibro-socketing through his head shifted into top gear.
"Good thing you're wearing Jedi clothes," said Bail, inspecting the damage. "They protected you from the worst of it, but you're still pretty torn up." "As long as there's no arterial bleeding, I'll be fine," he said, letting his gaze track up the other side of the ravine to the Sith temple, squatting above it in the sun. In the depths of his mind, barely audible through the pain, a malicious voice started whispering.
"Come on," he said, and took a limping step toward the rising slope.
Fresh pain flared, and the voice fell silent.
"Before it's too late."
"Wait a minute," said Bail.
"You want to climb up there now?"
He stopped, looked over his shoulder.
"Certainly." "Why? What do you suggest we do? Cultivate a suntan?"
"Obi-Wan," said Bail, incredulous, "have you lost your mind?" He shuffled around to face Alderaan's senator.
"No, Bail. I have, against all expectation, and most likely temporarily, regained it. Now, I realize you're malnourished, sleep-deprived, and quite possibly concussed. But I need you to listen to me very closely. If I do not take advantage of this brief lucidity, the next time I lose awareness will likely be the last. I must get into that temple. I must find something that will help me, help us, leave this planet. I must
die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die!
No!
He shouted and struck his injured knee with a clenched fist. The pain was excruciating. He would have fallen again if Bail hadn't grabbed his arm, his injured arm, which only made the flames roar higher. Teeth gritted, eyes burning, he took Bail by the shoulder.
"Stop arguing, Senator. We're not on Coruscant now. This is not a topic for endless Senate debate. I am trying to save our lives. Now, are you going to help me or not?"
Bail stared at him, shocked, silent, then nodded. The poor chap looked done in.
"I'm so sorry, Bail, that I got you into this,"
Obi-Wan thought.
"Okay, Master Kenobi," the senator said shakily. "You're the Jedi. We'll do it your way."
They made it up the other side of the ravine. Long since past caring if they swore or cursed or cried out, they dragged themselves over its crumbling edge and onto the parched, brittle grass of this new plateau. And when they'd crawled far enough to be certain there was no danger of falling, they collapsed, face down on the ground, sobbing for air, sobbing with relief, sobbing in the shadow of the brooding Sith temple. Through the lava-hot pain, Obi-Wan felt the building's cold touch, felt its menace freeze him and close its fist around his heart. His newly bright blood, which had begun to pump so freely, thickened and darkened and turned again to sludge. And the Sith's spiteful voice shouted, more gleeful than ever,
"Die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die!"
No, no. Not this quickly. It wasn't fair. The darkness was pouring back. The black wind was rising. And his tiny, bright flame was guttering out.
"Obi-Wan, don't listen to it. Stay with me."
That was Bail Organa, the senator from Alderaan. Far too good a man to be a politician. Echoing in his mind all the failures of his past. A maelstrom of death and loss and misery, sucking him down. It had been bad in the crashed ship, in the first woodland, on the rock plain, and within the second stretch of forest. But those times were nothing compared with this.
"Obi-Wan!"
He rolled over, opened his eyes, stared at Bail.
"Die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die!"
"I'm sorry," he whispered through the screaming in his head. "I can't hear you. It's too loud."
Bail's lips were moving. Dried blood flaked and fell.
Was this important? It must be. The senator was shouting, his wide eyes full of fear.
Should I be frightened? No, fear is bad. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Beware the dark side, Jedi.
Beware the dark side, for it's all around you now. Bail fisted his stone-scraped fingers in Obi-Wan's dirty, blood-stained tunic and lifted him partway off the ground. The Jedi's head lolled as though he were a broken doll. There was nothing familiar in his eyes. His lips were moving. He was saying something, but no sound emerged to give the words life. "Obi-Wan!" he shouted again, shaking him. "You have to fight it! We're so close, you can't give up now!" Except Obi-Wan hadn't given up. He'd been defeated. The Sith had defeated him at last. He'd said it. He'd said he wouldn't stay lucid for long, and when he went away the next time, he'd go away for good. And here he was. Gone. When Obi-Wan slipped from his grasp in the ravine, he'd thought the Jedi was dead. He thought he'd killed him. Couldn't believe the man had survived. Then he'd thought Obi-Wan really had gone crazy, talking about suntans, punching himself in his injured knee. And then he'd climbed up that criffing ravine, bleeding, hurting, without his precious light side, finding strength from who knew where. It had nearly killed him, and still he climbed it. Bail had never met anyone like Obi-Wan Kenobi. "That criffing climb nearly killed me, too. But we did it. We made it. And was it all for nothing? Is this the part where we lie down and die?" Well, to the hells with that. The crash didn't kill them. The lightning didn't kill them. The criffing ravine didn't kill them. The Sith? They can go to all nine hells, too. Gently, he lowered Obi-Wan back to the plateau's stunted grass. Then he staggered to his feet, and it hurt. Oh, it hurt. How much pain could a body take before it said enough? "Guess I'm going to find out." He didn't want to leave Obi-Wan lying there, exposed and defenseless. But he had to. He couldn't carry him into the Sith Temple even if he'd had the strength. The criffing place would probably stop the Jedi's heart. He was starting to wonder if he had strength left to walk in there himself. "It doesn't matter. I have to. And if I can't walk, I'll crawl." It occurred to him then, in a hazy, distant kind of way, that possibly he was no longer entirely sane himself. Certainly he'd never been in a situation like this before. Never been pushed beyond the bounds of physical endurance. Never been so hungry and thirsty. Never been so tired. Never been so angry or afraid. Not even on Alinta's space station, with blaster bolts exploding at him from every conceivable direction. Is this what being in battle is like? Is this what it was like for Padme on Naboo? On Geonosis? For Obi-Wan on Christophsis? Is this what every Jedi is living through right now? Is this how the clones feel fighting the Separatists? When I voted for the army, when I voted for war, is this the life I chose for them? Because if it was... But he couldn't afford to think of that now. Couldn't afford to dwell on Byers' remorse. Time enough to deal with his choices, with the consequences of his choices, when he was back on Coruscant, in the Senate, where a senator belonged, where he could really make a difference. Though it hurt his left shoulder like fire, Bail shrugged out of the backpack and dropped it to the ground. Then he squatted and rested his right hand on Obi-Wan's shoulder. "Wait here, my friend. I'm not leaving. I'm doing what we came for. I'm finding a way to get us off this rock." No answer. Empty-eyed, Obi-Wan stared at the sky. Muscles burning, bones grinding, Bail pushed to his feet. Then he turned and faced the Sith Temple, properly looking at it for the first time. Darkness. That was the overwhelming impression. Darkness and
and crimson, a crimson sheen within the stone, the sheen of old blood long since spilled and glitted over, blood of the innocent, blood of stolen lives. Working past that first oppressive impression, he saw the temple wasn't all that big. It was tall, yes, tall enough to be seen with inexpensive electro-binoculars across a large distance over rocky plain and straggled treetops. Large enough to be seen through the viewport of a crashing ship, buttressed with stone wings to keep it tall and strong. But though he'd called it a palace, it wasn't precisely palatial. It was oblong and windowless, and peculiarly restrained, almost self-effacing, powerful, yet withdrawn. As though it's hiding its true face, Bale thought. And if that's not Sith, then I don't know what is. He couldn't feel a thing from it, couldn't hear anything either, not a single sad memory stirred. And he had them. Oh, he had them. He remained deaf, dumb, and blind to this place. Its disinterest in him continued. For which, given Obi-Wan, I must be profoundly grateful. Besides the Sith Temple, the plateau was empty. Even more barren than the plateau on which they'd crashed. No trees, no plants of any kind, save the shriveled brown grass. No sign, he realized, of a starship they could fly home. Disappointment shafted. Foolishly, he'd hoped. If there was nothing of use to them inside the temple, he and Obi-Wan were about to die lonely, painful, lingering deaths. Unless I kill him first, and then kill myself. And on that cheerful thought, he started walking toward the temple. It occurred to him, in a hazy, light-headed, beyond-the-end-of-his-endurance kind of way, that if the criffing thing was locked, he was going to look like a fool. But it wasn't. The double doors swung open easily at a touch. And when he crossed the threshold, lights came on, dim and glowing and red, like the distant nebula in Zagula's night sky. As if to say, "Welcome, stranger, enter and be amazed." As if it knew he was nothing to fear. These Sith, these criffing Sith. Who, what, are they? There were no stairs inside the temple, no second or third floor. It was one cavernous chamber, like a ballroom for giants, or a church designed to make mortal men feel small. The air was cool and felt strangely expectant, tasted slightly metallic, not quite stale. The floor underfoot was tessellated black and crimson. The design was unsettling, crawling across the eyes, slithering into the back brain, invoking misery and loss. Bale shivered and lifted his gaze. The enormous room contained no furniture, no tables or chairs, not even a stool. And he couldn't see the source of the lighting either. It seemed to ooze from the walls like a marshland miasma. As his eyes adjusted to the low lighting, he realized there were alcoves built into the walls. He headed left, his footsteps loud in the silence, the dirt and gravel ground into his boot soles, sounding gritty and grating. He wondered if he was ruining the intricate mosaic work and found he didn't much care. The first alcove contained old books, very old, and leather-bound. Thick, bulky tomes with raised lettering on the spines. Like the floor's tessellation, they made his skin crawl. He folded his arms, wincing at the burn in his left shoulder, and quickly walked by. The second alcove was empty, but from it emanated such a chill that he scuttled past, like a child told that this house was haunted. The third alcove contained chunks of geode, livid green and bile yellow and dull purple crystals that glowed in the reddish light, unwholesome and diseased. Feeling distinctly queasy, he moved to the next alcove. Now he was staring at flickering circuits contained in a large square transparent steel box. It looked vaguely promising, but he wasn't prepared to pick it up. Did that make him a coward? Maybe, but he was too tired to care. The fifth alcove contained a single crystal, the size of a big man's loose fist, beautifully faceted and utterly ruined. Before its destruction, it had been the deep red of a sun's heart, but something had blasted it from the inside out, charring and cracking it. It was Sith, and so must be evil, yet still, he regretted the lost beauty. He kept on walking, discovering more and more things. A hand-sized pyramid, not transparisteel, but actual glass, dull black and traced with red. No hint of its purpose. More crystals, unshaped chunks of rock, some fist-sized, some as small as eggs. Their edges sharp enough to draw blood, colored black and gray and murky dark blue. More books, data crystals, ribbon-tied scrolls. It was a Sith treasure trove, surely. If they escaped Zagula, they'd have to take it with them. The Jedi Council would want to study these artifacts. Perhaps they contained information that could bring about this unspeakable enemy's downfall, which he would work toward in every way he could. For if he'd learned nothing else on Zagula, he'd learned that he'd been wrong, and Obi-Wan coldly right. The Sith must be hunted down and destroyed without mercy. And he was sure of another thing, too. He didn't begin to know what item or items among this collection of artifacts would help him and Obi-Wan get off Zagula before they starved to death, nor could he tell which one was affecting the Jedi. Probably Obi-Wan could. So he had to come in here. He had to see this for himself. If I can reach him, if I can help him come back. Abruptly aware he'd been in the temple for a long time, Bail turned away from inspecting the last alcoves and hurried outside to the real world to make sure Obi-Wan was all right. The Jedi hadn't moved, hadn't died. He still lay on his back, eyes open but unresponsive. His torn flesh had stopped bleeding. All the blood on his tunic and leggings was dried stiff and dark red. Grunting, aware of every muscle, every joint, Bail eased himself to kneel on one knee beside him and again touched his shoulder. Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan, I can't do this. I'm not a Jedi. You need to come back. You need to do your job. Nothing. Was he even dreaming anymore? It didn't seem so. He seemed empty. All his intelligence fled, and the oddly polite, unconscious arrogance with it. The wit, the dry humor, just a shell left. A drift of conversation, a memory to make him smile. You know, Bail, it occurs to me that you're wasted in the Senate. With a punch like that, you'd make a killing in the ring. Sorry, I needed to get your attention. Sorry. Sorry. On a deep indrawn breath, Bail backhanded Obi-Wan's face. Once. Twice. Loud, cracking blows that rolled the Jedi's head on the ground. Nothing. He couldn't keep on hitting the man. He might end up doing irreparable damage. Reluctantly, with a rising horror, Bail looked at Obi-Wan's damaged knee. It was swollen now, the torn flesh puffy and raw. He'd walked on it, climbed on it, but it was possible the patella had been cracked. If he punched it, I can't do that, it's sick. But Obi-Wan had done it, hadn't he? Used the pain to drown out the Sith's relentless voice? Used it to spur himself up the ravine? He couldn't punch that injured leg, couldn't. But he could lay his hand on it, gently, and maybe, possibly, squeeze. Lost in the darkness, lost in despair, Obi-Wan feels his spirit wandering, adrift. Not sundered from his body quite yet, but soon. He has lost the light and lost his purpose. Someone, somewhere, wants him to die. He wants to deny their desire, but he's cold, so cold. And then, something changes. A point of heat. A point of pain. His body is hurting, and that means he's alive. Someone is shouting, and the darkness recedes.
Wake up, Vape You! I can't keep doing this! Wake up, Obi-Wan! Do you hear me? Wake up!
His knee was on fire. Someone was punching it, pinching it, hurting him. With an effort, he rolled over and said,
Leave me alone.
Obi-Wan!
He dragged his eyes open. Was this a rooftop? Where was Anakin? He'd crashed his city bike, hadn't he? The temple transport droid would be displeased. And then he remembered. There was no Anakin. There was only the Sith. He was lying on the cold dirt of Zagula, and that was Bail Organa's gaunt, bloodied, and bruised face above him.
What a sight!
On the far edge of hearing, a voice implored him to die. He closed his eyes again.
Senator?
Come on, Bail said, sliding an arm beneath his shoulders. Up now. We don't have much time.
Time? Time for what? Please, leave me alone.
Bail hauled him to his feet, then swung him around. The damaged knee protested, and then gave way. Both his knees gave way, as he stared at the Sith temple and felt its malevolence crash upon him.
I know, said Bail, supporting him as he shivered. I'm sorry, but we have to go in there. You have to find what we need. I can't tell.
The black wind was howling inside his skull, trying to batter him into submission. Dark side domination. The brutality of might.
There are artifacts, he said, his tongue thick and clumsy.
Lots of them, but I don't know what any of them do.
Of course you don't.
He dragged himself free of Bail's supporting arm, struggled to hold on to the unraveling threads of his sanity, made himself look at the temple, at the Sith's beating heart.
You shouldn't have gone in there, Bail. Nothing Sith is safe.
I had to, said Bail. I had to see.
Yes, all right. But now you have to stay here.
No, said Bail, grabbing his arm again. Wait, you can't go in there alone. We can...
Again, he freed himself.
I said, stay here.
He snarled and turned his back on the man who'd helped him get this far alive. Dimly, he was aware of Bail behind him, struck silent. But he couldn't afford to worry about the man's feelings. Couldn't afford to think of anything but surviving long enough to defeat the Sith. Walking, limping toward the temple's tall open doors sent his mind reeling. It was like trying to walk into an inferno or swim through a tidal wave. He put his head down and pushed back, pushed through, feeling the drag against his bones and in his blood, feeling the Sith's hatred corroding him like acid.
Die, Jedi! Die, Jedi! Die, Jedi! Die!
The urge to surrender was almost overwhelming. Surrender. Succumb. Fall down and find peace. Let the darkness close over him. Let the pain finally end. But that would make him Xanatos. Qui-Gon Jinn deserved better. Bail Organa deserved better. Because surrender would kill him too and make his wife a widow. And Anakin deserved better. Much better than a master who would willingly give himself to the Sith. It occurred to him then, with a clarity that was startling, given the dark side hurricane howling through him, that Yoda was wrong about the dangers of attachment. Or at least that he wasn't altogether right. It was true, attachment could weaken a Jedi's resolve, but it could also strengthen it, as he was strengthened now by his love for Qui-Gon and Anakin.
Without them, he would have failed long before this moment. And so, leaning on them, he continued to fight. Awkward, nearly crippled, nearly weeping because the light side had been so long denied him, because the shouting was so loud, because his body wanted to obey it, he pushed over the temple threshold and into a place that was anathema to him, that hated him as though it were sentient, that with every step and gasping breath tried to end him in the force. The moment he set foot beneath the temple roof, the building's bones began to tremble, revolted by his presence, rejecting him like poison. Deep beneath him, a tremor ran through the Zagulan ground, and the voice in his head began to scream, and scream, and scream. Mind reeling anew, he staggered across the disturbing Sith floor toward the alcoves that were set into the temple's walls. The screaming in his head grew louder, wilder.
Die, Jedi!
Die, Jedi! Die, Jedi! Die!
Every step he took was torture. The inferno was inside him now, burning him alive. Almost sightless, hazily aware that the temple was shuddering, that he was shuddering, he fell against the wall and began blindly groping from alcove to alcove for the artifact responsible for his torment, for the hateful thing that wanted him to die. When his fingers closed around it at last, he thought his bones had burst into flame. Through a smearing crimson haze, he stared at what he held. An ancient black glass pyramid, Sith sigils tracing its surface blood red. Holocron. It felt alive in his fingers, vibrant with hate and rage and fear and loathing, vibrant with raw power. Alive with the dark side as he had never felt it before, or ever thought to. Such a small thing to contain so great and malevolent a power. His bones were crumbling now. They were turning to ash. He was dying. He was dying. The Sith had won. With his last breath, he smashed the holocron, and the fires went out. Lying on his back, on a mosaic floor that shivered and writhed beneath him, he listened to the silence in his mind and couldn't grasp what it meant. Looked up at the distant ceiling and watched it rock from side to side, uncomprehending. Watched the walls rock. Listened to the Sith Temple's stony lament. From somewhere outside, someone shouted his name. Shouted again.
Get out of there, Obi-Wan, you mad fool! The building's going to come down!
That was Bail. Bail Organa. A good man for a politician. And suddenly he remembered why he'd come into this dreadful place. He was looking for a way home. Had to find the way home. Had to save Bail Organa, whose life was in his hands. Groaning, retching, he struggled to his fists and knees, and then to his feet. So much pain in him now, he almost couldn't see straight. All around him, the temple was shaking. He staggered from alcove to alcove, scrabbling through each collection of artifacts. Books, no. Scrolls, no. The geodes made him retch some more, but there was no sense they could help him. Hurry. Hurry! Every wall was swaying. Now the alcoves were vomiting their treasures, artifacts smashing on the ugly mosaic floor. He found one cache of crystals, danced his fingers lightly across them, but all they did was make him dizzy. No way home there. Another alcove, a single crystal, red and ruined. As soon as he touched it, he shouted in revulsion, because he recognized it, remembered it. Could feel its echo in his mind. This thing, this monstrosity, had begun the nightmare, had reached from this temple into the starship, into him, and warped him,
tried to make him a murderer by compelling him to crash the ship. The stench of death was on it, even though it was destroyed. Bale's voice, anger and admiration combined. Whatever hold the Sith had on you, you broke it just before we hit the ground. It nearly killed you, but you broke it. You pulled us out of our nosedive and you did something with the Force.
Fresh strength flooded through him. He snatched up the ruined red crystal and hurled it to the floor. The impact shattered it into splinters, and he almost wept with joy. But the ground buckled violently, as if in furious protest, and he lost his footing. Crashing down on his injured knee had him screaming aloud. Another wild tremor, and more crystals fell, cracking like rotten eggs all around him. He groped at the nearest alcove for support so he could stand, keep on looking, and only run. Try to run. At the last possible moment, his fingers closed on something cold and rough and awful. And a window opened deep in his battered mind. He could see across the galaxy, as though across a crowded room. For a split second, it was wonderful. And then darkness smashed him flat.
Die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die.
He dropped the black and red crystal, spitting bile, and tried to stand so he could continue his search. But the floor was heaving, and the ceiling was breaking apart, like river ice at the great spring thaw. It was cracking and crazing, and if he stayed in here much longer, the Sith would get the death he thought he'd denied them. For the second time, as though it were meant, his fingers found that impossible device. The darkness shouted again, but this time he didn't let go. Instead, he thrust the thing inside his tunic, tried to stand, and had to duck as a chunk of ceiling missed his head by a whisper. Bail Organa appeared in the drunkenly swaying doorway.
Obi-Wan, get out of here now!
And then, like a fool, like an idiot, just like a politician, convinced the laws of nature did not apply to him, he ran into the dying Sith temple.
Are you insane? Obi-Wan demanded as Bail reached him. You get out!
You're welcome, Bail panted, dragging him to his feet. So it's run or die, Master Kenobi. Your choice, but choose now. Oh, how typical, always striving for the last word. Slipping and sliding, they bolted for safety, with the Sith temple throwing great jagged slabs of rock at them with every staggering step. They fell through the wildly swinging doors as the first of four walls bowed and buckled, rolled over the heaving ground, flailed themselves upright, and kept running. With a thundering groan, with a rumbling roar like the death of some dark, ancient beast of legend, the Sith temple fell in on itself, ceiling, walls, and buttresses shattering to pieces. The impact knocked them to the dying grass like a glancing blow from a thug's fist. Obi-Wan heard Bail curse, heard himself curse, as every bruise and cut and scrape and tear shrieked in outrage. As he felt a rib crack against the crystal shoved inside his tunic. Silence. Blessed silence. One heartbeat. Two heartbeats. Three heart...
Die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die.
Chapter 22.
No!
Knocked flat and breathless, Bail heard the outraged, desperate cry and somehow scrambled to his feet. It was Obi-Wan, bloodied, half-stunned, on his knees and screaming with fury at the red and black crystal clenched in his right hand. Clenched so tightly that blood seeped between his fingers. He felt like screaming himself. Felt like throwing himself to the ground again and hammering his fists against the hard, uncaring dirt. No, vape it, no! Isn't this over yet? Why can't this be over? But he didn't. It wouldn't help.
Unsteady on his feet, he edged cautiously to the left until he could see the Jedi's face. It was bone white, smeared with dirt, smudged with bruises. The cut over his eyebrow clogged with grit and glued with blood. His eyes were wild and red-rimmed, sunk as deep as death. It was the face of a man dragged beyond his endurance.
"Obi-Wan," he said warily. "Obi-Wan, what's wrong?"
Obi-Wan's head snapped around.
"Get away! Get back! You mustn't touch it!"
Halting, he raised both hands like a supplicant, like a prisoner who wasn't capable of harm.
"All right, I won't! What is that thing? Can it get us home?"
Obi-Wan didn't answer, just glared at the red and black crystal.
"It's still whispering. In my head is all I hear. Die, Jedi."
"Then we'll get rid of it, Obi-Wan. Whatever it is, we'll smash it. We'll..."
"Are you mad, Organa?"
the Jedi shouted. Oh, mercy, he'd become a crazy scarecrow of a man.
"This device is going to save us. It's the only thing that can save us. But it won't stop whispering. It won't leave me alone."
"Okay, Obi-Wan," said Bail, placating. "Then why don't you give it to me? It can't hurt me. I can't hear it. Let me keep it safe, like your lightsaber, and we'll figure out a way to shut the criffing thing up."
He took one cautious step. "How's that for a plan?"
"I said get back!" said Obi-Wan, and punched his right fist forward. Bail felt the blow in his chest, felt the force wave take him, felt himself flying, helpless, to crash spine first into the rubbled temple some 30 paces away. The impact was far worse than when he'd been flung out of the ship's cockpit. Then, Obi-Wan had tried to control his compulsion toward violence. But not this time. This time, the Jedi embraced it. The impact woke every sleeping pain in Bail's body. He couldn't move, couldn't breathe, couldn't speak or even groan. His nervous system had shut down. The lightsaber was useless to him. All he could do was lie there and wait.
"He said this might happen. He said he could turn, but I didn't believe him. I'm a fool. This time I really am going to die."
But Obi-Wan ignored him. Still on his knees, the red and black crystal was pressed to his forehead, and his lips were moving. One word, over and over, soundless and desperate. But it seemed that nothing was happening.
"I can't hear," he shouted. "Stop whispering at me."
Taking advantage of Obi-Wan's distraction, Bail struggled to move, but still his nerve-shocked body refused to obey. And then, just when he thought he might truly suffocate, his diaphragm spasmed and he could breathe. Wheezing, gasping, he flexed his arms, flexed his legs, terrified for one blind moment that he'd suffered some dreadful damage. He heard the slither and clink and chink of stone as the rubble began to slide and settle around him. That had him on his feet, heedless of all discomfort, imagining an imminent crushing beneath the crimson-black slabs. And Obi-Wan sent him flying again. He landed on open ground, hard on his side. Something tore his left shoulder, already badly weakened, and white-hot pain flooded every insulted nerve and sinew. He sank his teeth into his split lip, strangling a shout. Dimly, he heard Obi-Wan shout too.
"Be quiet! Be quiet!"
What the vape was he trying to do? Who knows? He's finally lost his mind. He can smash his skull to pieces now for all I care. Except he didn't mean that. That was his torn shoulder talking. That was days and nights of strain and hunger and thirst and fear. Obi-Wan wasn't the enemy. He'd been viciously attacked by the enemy. And if he was... How can a Jedi like Obi-Wan go insane? After all his years of training and everything he's seen and done, he's a good man. He's a great man. How is this possible? The dark side. The Sith. I never knew I could hate someone like this. Hate so I can taste it. Hate so I could kill. A long, thin shadow fell across his face. He looked up, saw Obi-Wan standing over him like a nightmare spat out of the 9 Corellian hells. He fumbled for the lightsaber, fingers thick and clumsy. Couldn't unclip it, couldn't find how to turn it on. Didn't dare turn it on anyway while it was attached to his borrowed belt. It was over. It was over. Obi-Wan was a Jedi. He could kill with his bare hands. Bail braced himself, thought of Breha, and for the last time waited for the killing blow to fall. Obi-Wan raised his hand, still clutching the red and black crystal.
No! No! Bail! Help me!
He felt his breath catch, thought this was some kind of last living moment's delirium.
What? Help me,
said Obi-Wan. He sounded desperate, and then, as though he were hamstrung, dropped to the ground, choked as his knees hit the dirt and dry grass.
Crystal is telepathic. It can reach Yoda at the Jedi Temple.
One word. Yoda. He'd been calling for help? With a rock? I will never understand these people. Their world is too arcane for me.
I'm sorry.
Obi-Wan pressed his fingertips against his face, trying to contain some pain beneath the skin.
But I can't break through. The Sith whispering won't stop.
They destroyed the temple and everything in it except for this one crystal, and still it wasn't enough? Still the Sith could kill them?
It's not fair. It's not fair.
Obi-Wan, he said, sitting up slowly, shrinking from the fire in his damaged shoulder. I don't know what you think I can do. I'm not telepathic. I can't broadcast my thoughts through that thing. And if you don't stop trying, it's going to burn out your mind. He held out his hand.
Give it to me. I can rig up a slab of that temple rock and smash it to pieces. You'll never have to hear a Sith voice again.
No, said Obi-Wan, and snatched the crystal to his chest as though it were precious, as though it were his child.
I can make it work, if you help.
Still moving slowly, feeling like he was negotiating with a ticking bomb, Bail eased himself to a crouch.
Me? What can I do? You're the Jedi, Obi-Wan. I'm just the politician along for the ride.
Obi-Wan's eyes were feverish.
My lightsaber, Bail. Pain clears my mind, drowns out the dark side, the ravine. Remember.
For a moment, Bail couldn't make sense of what Obi-Wan meant. And then, comprehension flooded him, and he was on his feet in a heartbeat, heedless of every scrape and bruise and tear.
No, Obi-Wan, absolutely not. You really are out of your mind.
Still on his knees, Obi-Wan's head lowered till his chin touched his chest. He breathed, just breathed, and it was painful to hear. Then he looked up.
You have a wife, Bail. I am a Jedi. We cannot die here.
He was going to be sick. His empty belly was churning. First the killings in the space station, and now this? Obi-Wan was crazy even to suggest it.
This is not happening. This is not my life. Senators from Alderaan, princes of Alderaan, do not find themselves in this position.
Except today, they did. He swung about, so angry, so frightened. There has to be another way.
Would I suggest this? If there were?
Said Obi-Wan. His voice was filled with a grim endurance.
Breha.
Slowly, he turned back again, desolate.
I don't know. Can't you think of... Obi-Wan, there has to be a different choice.
As though he'd run through the dregs of his strength, Obi-Wan folded in on himself until he was sitting on the ground.
There's not.
Fingers clenching and unclenching, longing for something or someone to punch, Bale stared at him. And say I agree to this insanity. How do I injure you with a lightsaber?
Obi-Wan's lips curved in the faintest, faintest smile.
Very carefully, Senator.
He laughed. He couldn't help it. This truly was madness. Utterly surreal.
Obi-Wan, are you sure? Really sure?
Obi-Wan nodded.
Oh, mercy.
He unclipped the lightsaber from his belt, Obi-Wan's belt, stared at its black and silver elegance as though he'd never seen it before. And in a strange way, he hadn't. At least not like this.
I don't even know how to turn the criffing thing on.
Obi-Wan held out his hand.
Here.
Bale watched him activate the weapon. Watched the mesmerizing blue blade leap from its hilt. Saw the apprehension, the resignation in Obi-Wan's sunken eyes. Taking the weapon back, he clutched it awkwardly. His hands were sweating, shaking. His heartbeat boomed in his ears.
What now? Coordinates,
Obi-Wan whispered. Coordinates?
Oh, of course,
to the planet. He'd scribbled them on a flimsy before they'd left the starship. Kept the flimsy in his backpack. An act of faith or wishful thinking?
Both.
Neither. It was all the same now. He fetched it and returned, walking carefully, not daring to run with a lightsaber in his hand. Obi-Wan had stretched himself supine on the dead grass. Zagula's sun, sliding down the sky, lay insubstantial shadows over his face. Holding the red and black crystal tightly in his left hand, with his right, he took the flimsy, then lightly touched the tear in his thigh.
Here. No point making new holes. Don't stab. Lay the blade against the wound. Not hard. Not long. I don't want to lose my leg. It's a bit far to hop home.
He was joking. How could he joke about this? This wasn't funny. This was dreadful.
Do you want me to warn you? Shall I count to three first?
Obi-Wan looked at him.
Bale.
Oh, right. He did it. An electronic sizzling sound. The sickening smell mingled of burning cotton and flesh. Eyes stretched wide, spine arching, Obi-Wan swallowed his distress and tried to send his thoughts through the Sith crystal. After a moment, he shook his head.
No good. Again.
Oh, mercy. Beyond the boundaries of the Republic, on planets with no moral code, sentience tortured other sentience for power or greed. Sickened by the notion, he'd always wondered how anyone could do it. Deliberately, cold-bloodedly, inflict pain on someone else. Even derive pleasure from it. Or conversely, feel nothing at all. He wanted to vomit. He wanted to weep. As the lightsaber burned him a second time, Obi-Wan's eyes went blank. A frantic pulse beat at the base of his throat. On a deep groan, he tried once more to reach the Jedi Temple.
Yeah, no, he said, teeth gritted. Again.
Dizzy, Bale pressed the back of his hand to his mouth. This is it. This is the last time. I'm not doing this anymore. And to make certain, absolutely certain, he took a deep breath and put some weight behind the bright blue blade. The voice came through so faintly that at first Yoda, sunk deep in meditation, thought he'd imagined it, thought he was dreaming or committing the grave error of aimless hoping. He'd been waiting so long with no answers, and had begun to fear the worst. Then he heard it again, stronger, vivid with pain, and stained with darkness. Obi-Wan's voice, his thoughts, unmistakable. Yet somehow, the dark side was threaded through his Force presence. Yoda rarely admitted to alarm, but the bitter taste of Sith in their communication was a legitimate cause for apprehension. The echo of another virulent voice.
Die, Jedi, die, Jedi.
Pushing the malevolence to one side, he descended more deeply than, until this moment, he'd ever dared to go, opening himself until he was virtually defenseless. Obi-Wan's thoughts poured into him, a desperate babble, as though he was terrified he could not maintain the connection. The intricacy of the details he imparted was as worrying as his fear, and that taste of the dark side. Telepathy was hardly ever so precise. Feelings, impressions, yes, but pinpoint accurate galactic coordinates? Precisely ordered requests? No, this communication was unwholesome. To the light side, abomination. Then, as suddenly as he'd made contact, Obi-Wan vanished. Not in death, but as though a holo transceiver circuit had fused. Heedless of the late hour, Yoda woke Mace Windu. "And you're sure it was Obi-Wan?" said Mace, after listening in focused silence. Yoda nodded.
"Yes."
Wrapped in a sleep shift, Mace slid off the end of his bed and paced to his window, where the nightlights of Coruscant played over his stern face. "Are you going to do what he asks?"
"No choice do I have. More Jedi we cannot risk. A death trap this Zagula is."
"Yes," said Mace, turning. "But set by whom? Dooku? Or this mysterious Darth Sidious?"
"When attacks on the Jedi the Sith make, one is as the other. Important only is that they have failed."
"This time," said Mace. They stared at each other, starkly aware of the dark side creeping closer.
"To ourselves we should keep this," said Yoda at last. "Until more, we understand."
Mace nodded. "Agreed." Then he sighed. "You'll see her now?"
"I will," said Yoda. "For time to waste, we do not have."
Slowly, reluctantly, he groped his way back to consciousness, guided by a familiar, urgent voice. "Obi-Wan! Obi-Wan! Did it work?" He cleared his throat. The pain in his leg had reached obscene proportions. It was so appalling, so obliterating, really the only thing he could do was laugh.
"Obi-Wan!"
Oh, dear, poor Bail. He sounded quite cross. With an effort, he smothered hysteria and opened his eyes.
"Yes," he said, his voice terribly altered. "It worked. Help is coming."
Bail swayed where he stood, then sat down abruptly. "Here," he said, and almost threw the deactivated lightsaber at him.
"Take this. Take it."
Moving only stoked the pain to newer, fiercer heights, but that was his lightsaber. He wrapped his fingers around its cool metal hilt, felt the peace that came from being whole again. Bail stared, his face haggard. "How long till we're rescued?"
"I don't know. A few days?"
"A few days," Bail echoed. "We've got the supplies if we're careful. But can you last that long?" What an interesting question. A shame his only answer was another, "I don't know. Perhaps." "Perhaps." Now Bail sounded offended.
"What the varp do you mean, perhaps? I haven't gone through all this to watch you die now, Master Jedi. You're not going anywhere, do I make myself clear?"
Whispering, taunting, the persistent voice of the Sith making itself heard even through all his bright pain.
Die, Jedi, die.
Senator Organa, it might not be up to you.
Bail looked at the red and black crystal tumbled onto the dry ground.
Are you absolutely certain you got through to Master Yoda?
Yes,
he said, remembering the touch of that ancient, disciplined, desperately sought intelligence, feeling again the overwhelming relief.
Then we don't need this criffing thing anymore, said Bail, and snatched up the Sith's telepathic device.
Enervated, incapable of protesting or stopping the man even if he'd wanted to, Obi-Wan watched as Bail smashed the Sith crystal to powder between two slabs of collapsed temple stone. The Sith's whispering fell silent, and even though the dark side still oppressed him, for the first time in days, in what felt like years, he was alone in his own mind. The relief of that reduced him to brief tears.
Hey!
Bail again, alarmed, squatting on his heels beside him, one hand on his shoulder, a warm, dependable, improbable presence. Blinking away weakness, he made himself look at the senator from Alderaan, saw clearly for the first time what he'd asked the man to do, the price Bail had paid for the courage of his convictions. Something of what he was feeling must have shown in his face.
Don't, said Bail roughly. It doesn't matter. We survived. The rest of it's nothing. Less than nothing. Just one more war story. The point is, we won.
Was this what victory felt like?
May the Force spare me another victory like this.
Hey, Bail said again. How are you, Obi-Wan? Really?
Really?
Beneath his aching bones, the hard, cold dirt of Zagula. In his battered body, a fire that would not go out.
Really, Bail? I hurt quite a lot.
Bail shook his head.
Thought so. But it's better than being dead.
Yeah, Bail said softly, and a slow smile spread across his thin, filthy face.
Yeah, you can say that again.
The smile faded.
So, no more voices?
No.
No more visions?
No.
Then let's see what we can do about the pain. I've got drugs in the first aid kit. Just don't argue with me, all right? I know where I can lay my hands on a lightsaber, and I'm not afraid to use it.
Obi-Wan looked at him. Anything he said would sound trite, sentimental. Anything he said would only embarrass them both.
Don't go anywhere, Master Kenobi, said Bail, patting his shoulder. I'll be right back.
As the senator from Alderaan withdrew to fetch the medkit, Obi-Wan let his eyes drift closed. For so many reasons, a Jedi's life was lived mostly solitary. For so many reasons, it was better that way. But sometimes, they could make an exception. Sometimes, unexpectedly, they could make a new friend.
First Padme, now Bail Organa. It appears I'm collecting politicians.
Who would have thought it?
Life is very strange.
Of all the beings she might reasonably expect to find in her living room at almost 3:30 in the morning, Jedi Master Yoda was at the bottom of the list. Stunned silent, Padme stared down at him. Only her years in public service saved her from betraying alarm.
Can it be Anakin? No. Why would he come to me for Anakin? It must be Bail and Obi-Wan. They've been gone so long now. Much longer than I thought.
She'd been covering for Bail in the security committee, but her excuses on his behalf were starting to wear thin, and she'd been getting more and more anxious. Belatedly, she remembered her manners.
"Can I offer you refreshments, Master Yoda? 3PO."
"Thank you, no," said Yoda, and raised a hand to the droid. "Regret this intrusion, I do, Senator Amidala, but on urgent business I have come."
"I gathered as much, Master Yoda, given the hour," she said, carefully noncommittal, determined not to ask questions, but to see what he was willing to volunteer.
"A favor I would ask of you, Senator. Should you agree, in your debt would the Jedi Order be?"
She pulled her robe a little closer to her body and sat on the nearest chair.
"There can never be talk of debts between us, Master Yoda. What do you need me to do?"
Yoda leaned on his gimmer stick. She thought he looked very tired, and at close to 900 years old, she supposed he had a right to be.
"Word I have received from Obi-Wan Kenobi. Stranded is he with Senator Organa on a planet called Zegula."
For a moment she felt light-headed with relief. "They're all right?"
"They live," said Yoda. "But they have no ship, and send a Jedi to rescue them, I cannot."
Relief chilled into foreboding.
"Because it's a Sith planet?"
Said Yoda, his eyes narrowing. "Well informed you are, Senator."
"In this instance," she said calmly, refusing to be intimidated, "I take it you'd like me to fetch them, Master Yoda?"
And that put paid to his flinty disapproval.
"Yes," he said, abruptly subdued. "The reason for my visit, that is, to ask for your assistance in this sensitive matter."
"Of course I'll assist you," she replied. "Always, whenever and however I can."
Some great weight seemed to lift from his shoulders then.
"In danger from the Sith you will not be, Senator Amidala. Deserted the planet is, save for Master Kenobi and Senator Organa."
Good. She'd had enough Sith to last her a lifetime.
"However," Yoda added, "clone troops will I send with you. In wild space is Zegula, a dangerous destination, and from home a long way."
"Wild space? Wait till Anakin heard about this." She pulled a face. "It can't be more dangerous than Geonosis, Master Yoda."
"Independent you are, Senator. This I know well," said Yoda severely. "But take the clone troops with you, you must. Unarmed is your private yacht. Protected you must be."
Anakin would say the same thing if he were here. If she flew off into wild space without any kind of military escort, he'd be furious, and worry about her even more when he was away fighting the Separatists and the Sith.
"The last thing I want to do," she thought, "is add to his burdens." "Of course, Master Yoda," she said, and stood. "The Royal Yacht's one of the fastest ships on Coruscant, and it's ready to fly at a moment's notice. At top speed, the clones and I will be there before Bail and Master Kenobi know it. Do you have the coordinates?"
Yoda took a data crystal from his pocket and held it out.
"Plotted on here the fastest course is, Senator. Follow it, and avoid trouble with the Separatists you will. Also on it are life-signed signatures for Master Kenobi and Senator Organa. Easy will that make finding them, I think. The clone troops I will send at once to your private spaceport."
Anakin was wary of this ancient Jedi. For herself, she often found him obscure and aloof. But she had the knack of reading people, and in his eyes now she saw such worry. After what she'd seen in the cavern on Geonosis, she knew Obi-Wan held a special place in his heart, though doubtless he'd deny it until he drew his last breath. The Jedi and their disdain for attachment.
"Master Yoda," she said, taking the data crystal, "I will bring Obi-Wan home to you safe and well. On that, you have my solemn word." To her surprise, he took her hand in his and held it.
"Thank you, Padme. Upon me you must call if ever a service for you I can perform."
If he knew how she and Anakin were deceiving him, he wouldn't be grateful. He'd be furious. Somehow she managed a smile.
I'll remember that, Master Yoda.
After he left, she got C-3PO to warn the spaceport to expect her and the clone detachment while she dragged on a flight suit, tossed some spare clothes in one bag, and stuffed another full of official data pads, then sent a time-delayed message to her Senate office, logging a personal business absence. 3PO was hovering anxiously by the apartment's front door.
Oh dear, m'lady, I'm afraid this sounds very dangerous. I do hope they're all right. I hope you'll be all right. Wild space. This whole business sounds most alarming.
Chances were that alarming was only the beginning.
Obi-Wan, Bail, what have you been up to?
But there was no point encouraging the droid to fuss.
I'll be fine, 3PO. You heard, Master Yoda. I'll have clone troops watching my back every minute I'm gone.
She patted his golden shoulder.
You take care of things here, and I'll see you again when I return, all right?
Oh, yes, yes, m'lady. Don't you worry about a thing.
He might as well have told her not to breathe.
No,
she said, hefted her travel bags, and took her apartment complex's swift tube to the parking bay and her private speeder. Chapter 23. As promised, the detachment of clone troops was waiting for her at the spaceport, heavily and reassuringly armed. Five soldiers and their leader, disconcertingly alike.
But only on the outside, she reminded herself. On the inside, they are themselves.
Senator, said the commander, saluting, bulky helmet neatly tucked under his arm. Captain Corbell reporting.
She didn't recognize his insignia. All she knew was that they weren't from Anakin's company, the doughty 501st.
Captain, I'm pleased to meet you, she said, and most appreciative of your help. I take it you've been fully briefed by Master Yoda?
Corbell nodded.
Certainly have, Senator. We're all of us fully medic trained, so that won't be a problem. We'll take good care of the General and Senator Organa.
She felt a punch of adrenaline burn through her blood.
I'm sorry, medic trained? I don't understand. Are you saying they're injured?
Oh, said the captain. Despite his rigorous training, concern touched his black eyes. I thought you'd been fully briefed as well, ma'am.
Apparently not, she said. But that's no matter. Master Yoda was tired and doubtless distracted.
Or else, just as Anakin complained, he very rarely stopped to think about trivialities like feelings.
Let's get on board, shall we? It seems we have no time to waste.
Yes, ma'am, said Corbell.
He collected his men with another nod.
Thank you so much, Yoda, she thought, as she hurried to her sleek, swift starship. Let's just hope there are no more surprises.
Unnerved by the worry she'd seen in Yoda's eyes, dismayed by what Captain Corbell had told her, once they cleared Coruscant, she poured on the speed, and the yacht ate up the parsecs between home and Zagula. If she'd been flying for any other reason than rescue, perhaps she'd have found herself excited by the prospect of leaving the Republic behind, the Outer Rim behind, and flirting with unknown, exotic, wild space. Even if her destination was a Sith planet.
But instead of excitement, all she could feel was apprehension. Bail and Obi-Wan injured? Whatever happened, it must have been bad.
Captain Corbell and his men kept their professional, polite distance, taking care of themselves and her, too, with an efficiency that could only be admired. Corbell had been most complimentary about the yacht's medbay.
I wish I found that less alarming.
To distract herself, and because she didn't dare let herself fall behind, she plunged into the Senate work she'd brought with her. The course the Jedi had plotted for her was flawless. they didn't encounter a skerrick of trouble. No separatists, no pirates, nothing to hinder their speed. When at last the NavComp announced their arrival at Zagula, and she dropped the ship out of hyperspace, she barely looked at the planet or the raging nebula behind it. Felt no excitement at the exotic location, just a pounding drive to find them, find them, find them. Captain Korbel came up to the cockpit. "I understand Master Yoda gave you General Kenobi's and Senator Organa's biosigns, ma'am."
"That's right," she agreed.
"Like me to scan for them while you're flying this sweet thing?" Clone Captain Korbel had a most engaging smile.
"Thank you, Captain," she said, smiling back. "That would be appreciated."
Then she patted the helm console. "And she is a sweet thing, isn't she?" Korbel nodded. "Sweetest ship I've flown in my whole life, ma'am." "And how long was that? 9 years? 10? She pointed to one of the other cockpit seats. "There's the sensor array console, Captain. The biosigns are already programmed into it."
"Excellent, ma'am."
After she'd positioned the yacht in a geosynchronous orbit, Korbel took a seat and started running various sensor sweeps. It didn't take long to find their quarry.
"On the night side," said the captain, "and they're alone. Whole vaping planet's empty, pretty much."
It couldn't have been too empty, or Bail and Obi-Wan wouldn't be hurt. But she didn't voice the thought, just tied in the nav comp to the biosigns readout and kicked the yacht in a shallow dive down to the planet's sunless surface. It didn't matter about them being found on Zagula's night side. The yacht's powerful floodlights could turn night into day.
"I'll return to my men," said Korbel, "if there's nothing else I can do here."
"No, no, you go," she said, distracted, staring through the cockpit viewport, feeling ill with apprehension.
"Once we're down," Korbel added, "you should let us recce the area before you set foot on the planet."
She glanced at him.
"But you just said they're..."
"Better safe than sorry, Senator," said Korbel with a shrug. "You're under our protection, ma'am. I'm aware of your expertise, but I'd appreciate it if you'd humor me."
In other words, Yoda had warned them she didn't like being fussed over. But Korbel was a good man, she liked him, and he was only doing his job. So she swallowed annoyance and nodded.
"Of course."
"Thank you, Senator," said Korbel, withdrawing, and she was left to land her sweet ship.
The first thing she saw in the floodlights was the edge of an enormous pile of rubble. Recent rubble, from the look of it. The stones showed no signs of weathering.
"Boys, boys, what have you done?"
The yacht settled like a lady on the barren plateau. She let down the ramp, rushed from the cockpit to the external hatch, then stood back to let Korbel and his men disembark for their recce of the immediate vicinity. Obeyed the captain's stricture to stay well out of sight and target range until he gave her the all clear. It didn't take long.
"All right, Senator," Korbel called up to her. "You're good to go."
At last.
She leapt to the top of the ramp and stuttered to a halt in the hatchway. Bail was standing at its base, waiting for her. He looked appalling.
"Senator Amidala," he said, offering an awkward bow.
The contrast of courtliness with his truly ruffian appearance, dirt and stubble and dried blood and cuts and bruises and rags and, oh, he'd gotten so thin, stopped her breathing for a moment. His eyes were very bright. Slowly, with great care, she walked down the ramp. She wanted to run to him, embrace him, but he looked so brittle she was afraid he might break. As well, Korbel and his men had formed up in close protection, and she felt suddenly conscious of senatorial dignity. Instead, she reached him and stopped, and gave him a tremulous smile.
"Senator Organa," she said, her voice unsteady, "I understand you need a lift."
Bail laughed, but his voice cracked, and he looked down, breathing hard.
"Only if you're going my way," he said after a long pause, then looked up. "I wouldn't like to put you to any trouble."
Her eyes were burning.
"No,
No trouble. There might be a small fee.
And then she stopped.
Oh, Bale.
To the hells with dignity. Besides, he was married and so was she. They held each other like brother and sister. She could feel his shoulder blades like knives beneath her hands.
I'm sorry, he muttered. I stink.
Yes, he did. And she couldn't have cared less.
You're alive.
Releasing him at last, she stepped back.
Where's Obi-Wan?
The smile died out of his eyes. Ah, he nodded toward the rubble. Over there. Master Kenobi is a man of leisure these days.
Oh no, oh no.
It'll take a couple of men to get him in the yacht, said Bale gently. He's not well, I'm afraid.
Captain, she said to Corbell, I'll need you in a moment, but for now, hold your positions.
Ma'am, he acknowledged. Say the word when you're ready.
Bale took her over to the collapsed building, where Obi-Wan sat on a seat made of stone, wrapped in a tattered heat-sealed blanket, the thin edge of the yacht's floodlights washing over him. And if Bale looked appalling, if Bale had gone thin and brittle,
there were no jokes. She had no banter. For this man, in this moment, she had nothing but tears.
Padme, said Obi-Wan, his voice as changed as the rest of him. Riding to the rescue again.
He smiled, and her heart broke.
It's good to see you, Senator. She couldn't speak,
could hardly breathe. When she was sure of herself again...
You... Reckless Jedi,
she said, walking forward, and when she reached him, she dropped into a crouch.
Anakin is going to be so cross with you.
Her head lowered then, and she fought a private, losing battle.
There, there, he said gently, and clumsily patted her shoulder. No need to upset yourself. It's not that bad, really.
She stood and stepped back, one hand dashing across her face.
Not that bad, she pointed. Let's start with the most obvious, shall we? What happened to your leg?
It was stretched out in front of him, his right thigh crudely bandaged with strips torn from his tunic, the wound patently severe. When Obi-Wan didn't answer, she turned to Bale and caught the most peculiar, complicated look pass between them. Then Obi-Wan sighed.
It's nothing, truly. A lightsaber mishap. A lightsaber...
She stared.
What? Again?
Hey, said Bale, resting a hand on her shoulder. It felt like a warning. At the risk of being pushy, Padme, I really want to get the vape off this rock. So can we, you know, go? There was a story here. There was a story. The air reeked of secrets. But this wasn't the time or the place to start digging for the truth. Not with Obi-Wan sitting there so reduced.
Of course, she said, then turned. And Obi-Wan, you'll be pleased to know that Master Yoda handpicked these clone troops. All of them are medics. You'll be well taken care of, I promise.
Painfully, carefully, with a tenderness that surprised her, Captain Corbell and one of his men carried Obi-Wan onto the yacht. She and Bale followed closely on their heels.
Thank you, Captain, said Bale, once Obi-Wan, beyond speaking, was settled in the comprehensively equipped medbay.
Give us a few moments, then he'll be all yours.
Corbell nodded. Sir?
I'll get us out of here,
Padme murmured, as the captain returned to the passenger compartment and his men. She touched her hand lightly to Obi-Wan's shoulder.
Don't worry, we'll be home soon.
Then, leaving Bale to keep him company, she went forward to the cockpit and did indeed get them the vape off Segula. Good riddance, good riddance. Criff the Sith and all their foul works. Return course set for Coruscant,
punched deliriously fast into hyperspace, she left the yacht to fly itself and made her way back to her rescued passengers. Lowered voices in the medbay stopped her outside in the corridor.
Well, she heard Bale say, is it coming back?
A long silence, then,
yes, said Obi-Wan.
Padme felt a new rush of relief. He'd looked so dreadful, as though he'd never speak again. She really wished she knew what they were talking about.
See, said Bale, I told you the Sith couldn't stop you being a Jedi. Not forever, anyway.
Yes, you did, said Obi-Wan. To her shock, his voice broke. Held such emotion. She'd never heard anything like it before, not from him.
You need medical attention, Obi-Wan, Bale said after a moment, and he, too, sounded like a man overwhelmed. You heard Padme. Yoda's hand-picked clone medics. So are you going to make a fuss, or will you let them do their job?
She heard Obi-Wan cough, a horrible, rattling sound.
Has anyone ever told you, Senator, that you're really rather annoying?
In fact, they have, Master Jedi, Bale retorted. But not as many times as you've been told you're a pain in the butt.
There was so much affection in their voices. Padme felt her throat close. She never imagined she'd hear Bale and Obi-Wan speaking like friends. Like two people who'd known each other for years. What had happened to them back on Zagula? She was desperate to find out.
You want a painkiller? Said Bale.
I believe I do, replied Obi-Wan.
Bale snorted. Smart man. I'll go get Captain Corbell. A moment later, he stepped into the corridor, saw her, and stopped.
Padme!
Caught eavesdropping, she lifted her chin.
Obi-Wan's not the only one who needs first aid. We've got 6 medics on board, remember. One of them is yours.
Bale nodded. That sounds good, but I'd like to sit for a while first.
Can we just sit, do you think?
His eyes were shadowed with what she was sure were dreadful memories, and he looked ready to drop where he stood.
Of course, she said gently. And if you want to talk, I'm here.
He shook his head. Not now. Maybe later. He'd have to talk about it eventually, for security reasons, if nothing else. But she could wait. She was good at waiting. She patted his arm.
Anytime, my friend.
Yoda found Obi-Wan in the temple's lush arboretum, sitting cross-legged under a waterfall, eyes closed, fully dressed, and perfectly dry. Not quite a week had passed since Senator Amidala brought him home from Zagula. He'd spent most of that time in a deep healing trance. Yesterday, Vokara Che had pronounced him fit to leave the halls of healing, but had restricted him to the temple precinct on pain of her most severe displeasure. The warning was as effective as a Geonosian containment field. Sensing his approach, Obi-Wan opened his eyes, smiled, and extricated himself from beneath the waterfall. A wave of his hand started the water freely flowing again, and he bowed.
Master Yoda.
Master Kenobi, he replied. Sit.
Obi-Wan sank to the cool grass. Only the slightest hesitation in his movement hinted that he might not be quite himself as yet. That and the fact that he still needed to finish regaining the weight he'd lost in his battle with the Sith. Balancing comfortably on his gimmer stick, Yoda inhaled the fragrant arboretum air deeply. Wondered about the waterfall. Decided not to ask.
Eager the council is, Obi-Wan, to hear of what happened on Zagula, he said instead. Ready to speak of it yet, are you?
Obi-Wan's expression did not change, but the faintest of shadows touched his eyes.
I think so, Master Yoda.
An affirmative answer, that is not.
I'm sorry, Master. It's the only answer I have to give you. Yoda sighed.
Troubled you are, Obi-Wan. Understand I do. Time you need, and time you will have.
Obi-Wan plucked a stem of grass and considered it, his face grave. Stroked a fingertip down its blue-green length. Then he shivered. Do you know, Master Yoda, he said, his voice very low, there is more of the light side in this sliver of grass than I could feel in my whole body while I was on Zagula. It was, he exhaled so slowly, the most empty, the most lonely, the most bereft I have ever felt. Worse even than all the deaths I relived so many times, as though each time was the first. He let the blade of grass slip from his fingers, his gaze roaming across the arboretum. That emptiness is what awaits the Republic if we should lose this war with the Sith. It is an outcome to be deplored and avoided at any cost, no matter how high. Yoda felt the echoes of Obi-Wan's memories in the Force, felt the touch of that dreadful bleakness and a bitter sting of cold.
Agree with you, I do. But dwell on this experience you must not, Obi-Wan. Survive it, you did. Learn much, you did.
Obi-Wan nodded. That is true, and I shan't dwell, I promise.
Tell me, can you, the most important thing you learned?
That I am a Jedi, said Obi-Wan simply, after a long silence. Simply and with great joy. And always will be. Yoda smiled, then sighed again.
A great pity it is that the artifacts you discovered in the Sith Temple were ruined beyond recovery.
Obi-Wan shook his head. They were poison, Master, steeped in the dark side. I think it likely not even you would have been allowed to touch them safely. That made him stare.
Indeed.
Indeed, said Obi-Wan, and held his stern gaze. He poked the tip of his gimmer stick into the ground and watched the soft soil give way. Smiled, not warmly.
Lost to us the artifacts are, it is true, but also to the Sith. A victory, that is.
He looked up.
And what of this senator from Alderaan, Bail Organa? Trust him, can we, Obi-Wan, to keep our secrets safe?
For the first time since his return to the temple, Obi-Wan smiled an unfettered, unshadowed smile. Oh yes, Master Yoda, we can trust Bail with our lives.
Pleased to hear it, I am, he said. And now leave you I will. Rest, Obi-Wan. Your strength you must recover. Need you we do in this war against the Sith.
Obi-Wan nodded. Yes, Master. At the arboretum door, Yoda paused and looked back. Obi-Wan had returned to his seat beneath the waterfall. He looked happy. Despite his burden of worries and secrets, Yoda smiled, with warmth this time, and left him to play. Even though she knew what he was like about getting messages promptly, Ahsoka took a moment, just a moment, all right, several moments, to stand in the doorway of Alantine 6 Shipyard's Hangar 9C and watch Anakin run through his force-enhanced calisthenics. Barefoot, stripped down to his leggings, he used the whole empty hangar space to full effect. Powerful and effortless, in perfect tune with the Force, he performed, his execution flawless and very fast, 75 traveling double-twist backflips. She counted. And as he landed the last one, his breathing steady and undisturbed, he swung immediately into a one-armed handstand, poised on 4 spread fingers and a thumb. Eyes closed, he said, "What is it, Ahsoka?" No one was ever going to play hide-and-go-seek with Sky Guy. "Incoming holo message from Coruscant, Master." And then he was on his feet in front of her. And there was this moment,
this tiny moment, again, as usual, when she could never catch how he got from there to here.
Obi-Wan?
She nodded.
Obi-Wan?
He shot her a cold look in passing. You don't ever make him wait. Falling into step behind him, walking fast, she cleared her throat.
Sky Guy?
He slowed, turned. Cold, was cautious now. He was coming to know her.
What? I think he looks a bit... wrong.
And then, she had to run to keep up. He took the call in the chief designer's office, unceremoniously evicting the chief designer, his assistant, and two other shipyard execs. They were coming to know him now, so nobody said a word. They just left. Ahsoka tucked herself into a corner and pricked up her ears.
Obi-Wan,
Anakin said to the hologram sitting on its desktop transceiver.
Sorry, I was training.
Master Obi-Wan's hologram looked Anakin up and down.
Yes, I can see that.
Anakin ignored the gentle sarcasm.
So you're back from your mission, at last.
How did it go?
Moderately uneventful, thank you.
Obi-Wan did blandly evasive like nobody's business.
I have a new assignment for you.
Anakin folded his arms.
Yeah, that's great. Obi-Wan, what happened?
Oh, it's far too tedious to get into. How's your apprentice coming along?
Ahsoka scowled.
What? They thought she was an idiot?
So they couldn't discuss the mission in front of the Padawan?
They could just say that. She wouldn't burst into tears.
She's fine, Master. You're not looking well.
You're imagining things, Anakin. Now, do you want to hear about your mission?
Yes, said Anakin, rolling his eyes. But in case you think we're done discussing this, we're not. What's the mission?
New intelligence has just come in. The Separatists have established a secret listening post. It could explain how Grievous took out the Farlene battle group.
Any idea where it's located?
Well, no. That would account for the secret part of secret listening post, Anakin.
Ha ha, said Anakin, but he did smile, even though his eyes were still worried. So you want me to find Grievous's spy hole? Do I take the Twilight and Captain Rex?
You do. We've also picked up some partially triangulated chatter, which I'll have transmitted to your bridge. That should get you started on tracking down this mystery base.
Thank you, Master, said Anakin. Don't suppose you'll be joining us for this one, will you? Master Obi-Wan shook his head.
No. I'm afraid I'm involved in an extensive mission debrief. Maybe next time, but I wish you good hunting, Anakin. Find that outpost. Things could get tricky for us fast if you don't.
The Hololink disconnected. Ahsoka waited, but Anakin didn't move. Instead, he stared at the empty transceiver.
Extensive mission debrief, my crippled old dewback, he muttered. You're convalescent again, Obi-Wan. What did you do?
Ahsoka stepped forward.
I guess he'll tell you when I'm not around, she said. Sky Guy, can I go find Rex? Let him know we're on a countdown?
Anakin nodded. He was hardly paying attention.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks, she said, heading out. But in the doorway, she paused and looked back. She knew him well enough now to know he was really worried.
Hey, Sky Guy, he didn't look that bad. Whatever it was, I bet it was practically nothing.
Anakin spared her a startled glance, then a wry smile.
Yeah, I guess. Go tell Rex I'll come brief him soon, okay?
Okay,
she said, hurrying off to find their clone detachment. Did a few backflips of her own to celebrate.
Another mission. No more boring shipyards.
Yes!
Life was finally looking up.
When Palpatine saw Bail Organa in the noisy Senate cafeteria, deep in lunchtime conversation with Padme and that inept Gungan bumbler Jar Jar Binks,
He suffered an actual physical shock. Organa was alive? He was here? On Coruscant? But that must mean Kenobi was alive too. Because if he was dead, with Organa surviving to tell the tale, the Jedi would have mentioned it. If Kenobi was dead, neither Padme nor Organa would be laughing so delightfully together. When had Organa returned to Coruscant? And why had Mos Amita failed to inform him of the fact? Was this another functionary he'd be forced to replace? The recent extended absence of Alderaan's popular senator had been noted. There had been some muttering. He'd been on the point of expressing concern and launching a discreet little investigation, which would then reveal the truth of Bail's tragic demise, and the tragic demise of a great Jedi hero. And now, they weren't dead? How disappointing. Although, now that he looked closely, Organa did seem a little worn. So something must have happened. Perhaps Kenobi was a little worn, too. With luck, he was a lot worn. He'd have to ask Yoda. But worn wasn't good enough. He'd wanted them dead. He was aware of rage bubbling beneath his surface. He had not bothered to pursue the Zagula Gambit himself. He had assumed, he had accepted, that Dooku would keep track of that. That was his function. That was his purpose. That's what an aging apprentice was for.
Housekeeping.
Did this mean Zagula was compromised? Or worse, did it mean its treasures were destroyed? Priceless Sith artifacts hoarded over centuries.
If this is true. If this is true.
With more of an effort than he cared to expend, Palpatine soothed his rage into affable cordiality, smoothed his expression into one of genial goodwill, and set forth across the dining floor to engage Padme and Bail, and, if he had to, the regrettable Jar Jar Binks in the kind of wistfully erudite conversation that had earned him so many, many friends. And as he greeted them, as he joined them, as he asked about their day, beneath the affable surface, Darth Sidious's dark thoughts seethed.
This is a minor setback, a mere ripple on the pond. There are many other artifacts at my disposal. I still have Anakin. He still has Padme. The war is worsening at every turn. Kenobi serves on the front lines. He could perish any day. Organa can be easily enough contained. And as for Dooku, I'll deal with him when it's time. This Republic will fall. I have foreseen it.
This is Jeff Gerner. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: The Clone Wars, Wild Space, by Karen Miller. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Star Wars: The Clone Wars, Wild Space, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2008. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audio presentation. All rights reserved.